Shelley Higgins Devine on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
Ask any voter what will be front of mind when they cast their vote on Saturday, and cost of living is always top of the list, particularly at the moment when it comes to power prices. With every party promising to put an end to skyrocketing energy bills, it's important to know which policies will mean more money in your hip pocket and which ones might be too good to be true. Hugh Grant is an independent energy analyst and executive director of Responsibility. Hugh, good morning.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Now, if you have a question for Hugh regarding your energy bill, this is your chance. 1300 222 612. So give us a call now. Hugh, last time Steve spoke with you, you'd looked at the energy bill savings each of the parties are offering through their policy announcements. Now, with further policy announcements, you've once again crunched the numbers and have estimated annual price impacts of those various policies on typical Queensland household bills over the next 3 years. So what have you found? Take us through.
So, yeah, last time I met with Steve, we talked mainly about the profit component. So a fair amount of your bill, the Queenslander's bill, about a third of the bill is actually profits. So for a typical household bill of $1,750 per year, about $600 of that bill is profits. And of that $600, $500 is collected by the Queensland government through its energy companies. So the last discussion I had with Steve was focused on that. And we talked about the amount of profits that the parties were willing to forego. In addition to those policies, there's obviously a whole lot of other policies that have been announced in the past few weeks as well, and I've crunched the numbers on all of them. It's probably fair to say that many of the price impact claims that are being made by the parties are exaggerated, and so I've got a pretty scathing critique of all of the parties' policies. I've got a 40-page analysis that I'll release after this interview. But the overall impact on a typical household bill of the parties' policies, I've analysed the five main parties that are coming to this election. So a typical Queensland household bill of $1,750, the overall impact of all of the parties' policies, the Greens, I would suggest that if their policies are implemented effectively, their policies would reflect a reduction of about $600, about 32% on a typical household bill. That would be followed by the Katter Party that would probably be delivering something like a $280 reduction, about a 15% reduction. Next would be Labour, with about a $160 reduction, about a 9% reduction. That would be followed by One Nation, which would be about a $90 reduction in a typical bill, about a 5% reduction. And then finally, LNP's, according to my analysis, the LNP's policies would actually result in an increase in prices of about $30. So
an increase?
An increase, yeah. And there are many reasons for those differences. And, you know, the analysis I'll send out today has got a 40-page critique. But if I was to try and summarise it really simply, there's probably two key policy areas that are driving those differences. The first area is how much profits are they willing to forego from their government-owned energy companies. And there's probably two camps. You've got the mainstream parties, LNP and Labour, that are pretty much addicted to those returns. And of the $500 that they're collecting, the Queensland government's collecting, they'd probably let about $50 of it go, so less than a tenth. Whereas the minority parties, they're willing to forego a lot more profits. So the Greens would be about $500, and Katter and One Nation would be about $300. So that's one key area of difference.
Can you afford to be a bit more generous, however, when it's probably not going to be you in power in the end?
So I guess you're asking the state budget's dependence on this, but I guess I've been arguing for quite a while now that particularly when it comes to the monopoly network's profits, they're excessive and they're unsustainable. So I think we need political parties to take a long-term view of the sustainability of that income. We've had both sides of politics been addicted to the incredible returns they get, particularly from the monopoly networks. It's not sustainable, and I guess it's a tax by stealth. I think also if you take a longer-term view of the impact of having efficient prices on the state economy and what that might mean, rather than focusing on the short-term impacts of a state budget being propped up by unsustainable profits, if you take a long-term view, then I think on balance, having efficient prices is actually more reflective of the community's long-term interest. The other main area of policy difference, Kelly, is in the party's approach to, or the party's carbon and renewable energy policies. And I guess there's two main camps there as well. So in one side, we have Labour and the Greens, whose policy platforms are pretty consistent or broadly consistent with our international emissions reductions obligations, and they accept and don't deny the economics of renewable energy. So they're pretty consistent with science and engineering and economics. On the other side of the fence, we have the LNP and One Nation that have a policy platform, a suite of policies that are in denial of what we've signed up to in the Paris Agreement. They're completely inconsistent, and they're in denial of the economics of renewable energy. Renewable energy is now much cheaper than conventional fossil fuel generation. You've got the LNP and One Nation standing on a platform of scrapping all of the policies that are putting downward pressure on wholesale prices, the renewable energy targets, and they're actually have some reckless policies about supporting the building of coal-fired power station in North Queensland, which is the last thing we need. It's technically, environmentally, and economically silly. And it's a complete violation of, you know, all of the independent advice they would have received on that.
Well, but isn't their argument, though, that it's needed now, that we can't wait for renewables to become price-effective for people in those parts of Queensland? Yeah,
there is absolutely no technical need for a coal-fired power station in North Queensland. We've got a huge amount of excess capacity in Queensland. The last thing we need is another coal-fired power station in the north. We've actually got too much coal generation. Coal generation is not flexible. It's not dispatchable, and it doesn't suit today's grid's needs, which is dispatchable, rampable power. Putting another coal-fired power station, particularly in North Queensland, would create a whole lot of technical issues to the system and cause system reliability and security issues. It's totally uneconomic. It would be about twice to three times the price of a renewable plant. And by the time it's built, it would probably be four times the price because renewables are dropping so quickly. And that ignores the carbon liabilities. It's totally inconsistent with where we're trying to track.
So with that then, how does Labor sit with carbon and renewable policies?
So Labor's policies are, as I say, they're broadly consistent. They're not quite as progressive as the Greens in terms of aligned with our Paris Agreement commitment. So this power sector, according to our international emissions reductions commitments, the power sector needs to decarbonise by 2050. Greens and Labour have got policies that are reasonably consistent with that. The Labour has a 50% renewable energy target by 2030, and that's reasonably consistent with it. They also have a net zero emissions target by 2050, which is consistent as well.
Let's go to some calls, 1300 222 612. If you have a question for Hugh Grant on power prices this morning, I got through till now without saying this afternoon. Paul from Bellbird Park, hello.
Hello there, Kelly, how are you there?
Very well indeed.
You nearly got through there, you nearly did it. You almost
got through. I know, I was so close. So what's your question?
Why? Why are we suddenly hit with 70% increases in power bills? You said profit. Is that new, or is that something that's been going on all the time? Why do we suddenly get hit with this, and suddenly someone thinks that we have this much spare cash that we can just throw it to the power companies or the government?
Good question.
So the primary driver, excuse me, Paul, the primary driver of our excessive prices in Queensland, there's a number of factors, but the main driver is our excessive monopoly network prices. So that's the prices of the transmission and distribution networks. That's Energy Queensland and Powerlink Queensland. 10 years ago, we transferred responsibility for their regulation. These are regulated monopolies. We used to regulate them on a state basis. We transferred that regulation to a national regulatory system 10 years ago. That's been a catastrophic failure. They used to be 20% of your bill, now they're 50 to 60%. And these businesses are making profits that are the envy of the stock market and are zero risk businesses. some of the policy platforms that have been proposed by the Carter and the Greens for this upcoming election are that we revert back to state-based regulation and we get that that gouging under control. That has a lot of merits because we've had both sides of Queensland politics for the last 10 years pointing to a national regulator when the prices go up and saying it's outside of their control, but they've profited substantially from it. Bringing it back to state-based regulation where you've got that regulation controlled by the state governments that own it would provide single-point accountability and stop that blame game.
So is this why, for example, you read the stories, you hear the stories on this radio station about people who've basically turned everything off? You know, they're not using their air conditioners, they're not using their heaters, they've tried to do the best they can with their hot water systems, all those things that drain a lot of power, and still their power bills don't shift much. That it seems that how much power you're using actually doesn't make that much difference to your bill in the end.
No, it doesn't, because what's happening is many analysts are suggesting we're heading towards a death spiral because these regulated monopolies, they get a guaranteed revenue irrespective of demand. So when you reduce your demand, the prices increase because they get a fixed revenue irrespective of the consumption. And, you know, I guess many people are saying that it's completely unsustainable. And our prices, our network prices, are at least twice the efficient level. So people are making decisions like that that they shouldn't be making. They're uneconomic decisions, but they're actually being made on the basis of artificially inflated prices. And, you know, it's really sad that we've got, I guess, such short-term thinking and both sides of politics that's led us into this situation. They can't think beyond the 2 or 3 year term. They can't think beyond the addiction to those short-term returns. But the damage that it's doing to the broader Queensland economy is substantial.
Mm. How long would it take to implement these changes if whichever party got in? Are they things that could come in immediately, yeah, or would they take time?
So the two categories of change of policies that I talked about, one was reducing the profits. That can be done immediately. We've got ownership of these energy companies. We can set the prices tomorrow. So that can be done immediately. And I've assumed that's done pretty much in early 2018. There's a broad, the other suite of initiatives that have been proposed, some of them have implementation timeframes. Probably the longest implementation timeframe would be the move to a Southeast Queensland government-owned retailer that might take up to a year and there'd be transitional costs. So I've factored in all of the costs and timeframes into my analysis.
With the 50% target, the Australian Institute of Progress released a report yesterday into the Queensland State Government's 50% renewable target by 2030. You've sort of touched on that report. Going back to that, do you agree with the analysis?
Not at all. You know, Kelly, I spend 100 hours a week trying to read all the independent stuff, never mind looking at reports that have been released by an LNP-aligned lobby group 4 days out from an election. I've read all of the reports that were referenced in that report that was released yesterday, and I've formed very different conclusions, as have all independent analysts. So I probably wouldn't want to spend too much time going through it. But basically you've got a set of conclusions in a 16-page report that says that, from an LNP-aligned lobby group, that says that Labor's policies are reckless, they're going to destroy the economy, there's going to be job losses and blackouts. Every other independent analysis into the same set of data has reached very different conclusions. Yesterday we had a report by the chief scientist, Alan Finkel, that talked about the feasibility of the 50% renewable target by 2030, and he's concluded that it's, you know, very minimal investment, and he's concluded the opposite of what that report did.
Mm. Andrew from Benoa wants to know, how will Snowy 2.0 help Queenslanders?
I think, yeah, potentially it's a long-term initiative, but the technology changes, the technology prices are changing daily and they're dropping significantly. When you look at what the federal government has actually committed to, it's really just committed to a feasibility study. There's a whole lot of flaws or holes in the argument that this is the game changer that they're saying it will be. I think pumped hydro will be a significant part of the future in terms of storage and fast response, and that's what the grid needs. Whether or not it will be pumped hydro from Tasmania, I'm not sure. the economics of it hasn't been demonstrated yet. There's a whole load of costs that would need to be added to what they're contemplating at the moment to really reflect what the true cost would be. I think there's, and it's very large scale, there potentially is a lot of more smaller scale regional pumped hydro, and there's a fair amount of opportunity for that in Queensland. That might come on earlier, and it might deliver the benefits that we're expecting from, you know, such a large scale project, and it's probably at least 7 years away.
Hugh Grant, one of the issues with renewables has been storage of energy, and Australia's chief scientist Alan Finkel yesterday released a report showing power bills will go up, energy supply will be less reliable unless Australia develops better storage systems. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, but what he pretty much said, if you read the detail of that report, what he pretty much said was that up until you get beyond 70%, the storage investment is quite modest. He's certainly said that up to a 50%, there's very minimal investment required in storage. And, you know, a lot of the media coverage you get in this is, it's fake news. I mean, there's so much fake news, it's a very political policy area. But I think that Finkel report, which goes to COAG this weekend, it's a good addition to the policy debate, and it puts in context just how little storage you do need for certain levels of renewable penetration. Up to 50% is pretty much saying that there's modest investment, and we need to harness the demand side response capability that we have today. We need to modernise the national electricity market rules to capture the energy security potential that we have on people's homes at the moment. Yeah, I don't think there was anything in that report that suggested that 50% renewable targets were reckless. If anything, it said the opposite.
And when we talk about storage, is that for home storage, or are we talking about business storage? What areas are does that apply?
So it contemplated
to?
Storage across the spectrum. So utility scale storage, including pumped hydro, through to batteries in people's homes. And he also talked a lot about demand response and harnessing the demand response. There was nothing too controversial in there that we haven't heard before, but I think it's going to COAG when they're going to be debating this new national energy guarantee, and it'll be a useful input to that debate.
Because it seems that people are voting with their wallets, and that tech gets better and better when people start to do that, and it takes leaps and bounds once people are making some money. It's like, right, how do we get this cheaper so we can put out more of it and it's better, like all technology. Are we seeing that leap with storage?
We're seeing it in renewables plus storage, and importantly, we're seeing it in big business. So you might recall that we were told that Whyalla, the steelworks, was going to be wiped off the map. They've invested about $1 billion solar plus storage plus pumped hydro system that's going to save them about 40 to 50% in their energy prices. We've got the biggest hothouse being developed in a site near Stanmore that they're spending $750 million and they're expecting similar savings, and that's all renewables. So big business has worked out that it's no longer an environmental argument, it's an economic argument.
And that's when real change happens, when the money gets involved. Brett from The Gap wants to know why renewables are often blamed for an increase in energy prices, and are they to blame? And if not, what's the justification for major parties blaming them?
Unfortunately, we've got a deeply misinformed public. We've got one side of politics that's propagated the myth that renewables are expensive and unreliable, and that coal's cheap and reliable. Nothing can be further from the truth. But we've got a very complicit media, and it's not surprising that most people in the community that are not engaged in this on a daily basis are deeply misinformed about the facts. I mean, if you look at the outages that happened in South Australia last year, that was blatantly politicised for political gain. No matter how many 200, 300-page independent reports you get that tell you that was not the fault of renewables, in fact, you know, fossil fuel technology was probably more to blame. No matter how many independent reports you get on that, the complicit media in Australia has continued to propagate the myths of one side of politics, and we've got a deeply misinformed public.
So renewables aren't aren't the problem when it comes to electricity prices?
Absolutely not. I mean, the renewables are putting, so and I guess you have to contextualise the debate in terms of what is the contribution to your bill. All of the debate about generation technologies is it reflects about a quarter of your bill, so it's the generation component. Mm. And renewables and progressive renewable targets are actually putting downward pressure on prices. We've had numerous reviews, including a review by Warburton that was commissioned by the current federal government, that concluded that renewable targets and stronger targets were actually putting downward pressure on prices. Mm-hmm. You don't hear that in the media.
Yeah. I was looking at a picture yesterday, I think it might have been on Twitter, Facebook feed, wherever it was, of a huge solar plant out Longreach Way.
Mm.
Do you know how far that is off completion? Or?
Yeah, there's so many. Sorry, I don't know the details of that project, but there are so many renewable projects that have been facilitated by this existing state government. And I think I've been very critical of our state energy minister, Mark Bailey, in terms of his approach to the networks. But he's done some great stuff in terms of facilitating renewables in Queensland. I think there's about 1 or 2 gigawatts in the pipeline now. Mm. They've also committed to large-scale solar thermal, which provides its own storage inbuilt. We've probably in Queensland got amongst the best solar resources in the world. And if we had a facilitative policy environment, we've potentially got the area that could deliver the cheapest solar power in the world, or mm. close to the prices that we're getting in the Middle East. At the moment, we're getting solar projects commissioned that are probably less than $50 per megawatt hour. A new coal plant would be 2 or 3 times that. And that will drop probably to closer to $20 to $30 per megawatt hour in the next 10 years.
Mm. Well, Hugh Grant, it's been wonderful having you in this morning. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise.
Kelly.
Hugh Grant, who's an independent energy analyst and executive director of Responsibility. You're on ABC Radio Brisbane.
You're with Kelly Higgins-Devine on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.